The State Department is releasing its first batch of emails that Hillary Clinton wrote as Secretary of State using a private email address. And the Associated Press is reporting today that Clinton did receive information about the deadly 2012 attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya, on her private email server. They weren't classified before. Now they are.
So that's just some of the 2016 news that's making headlines this week. And Jeremy, I know you love this part. So
here we go.
Cue the song.
Here and now,
2016.
Joining us now, Julie Mason, host of the Press Pool on SiriusXM's POTUS Channel 124. Hi, Julie.
Hey.
And Don Gagne is with us, national political correspondent for NPR. He's been in Iowa with the Republican candidates over the past week. Hi, Don.
And I keep my little pitch pipe in my bag so I can always sing at a moment's notice
Good.
On the trail.
It's always nice to bring a little barbershop quartet to the 2016 race. Well, Julie, let me start with you. Hillary Clinton, she took questions from reporters on Tuesday for the first time in nearly a month. She said she wanted the State Department to release these emails as soon as possible. Let's listen to what she said on Tuesday.
I have said publicly, I'm repeating it here in front of all of you today, I want them out as soon as they can get out.
But will you demand it? Will you demand it?
Well, they're not mine. They belong to the State Department. So the State Department has to go through its process, but as much as they can expedite that process, that's what I'm asking them to do. Please move as quickly as they possibly can.
So they have done that. And what do you make, Julie, of the news that has come out so far about these emails?
Well, part of the problem with the emails is that she destroyed a whole bunch of them, so we will never actually know. There's new headlines today that as you just reported, that some of those emails are now being classified. But if she really wanted to get them out so fast, why did she keep them on a private server? It just strains credulity. She's doing herself no favors with this whole issue.
Don, your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll tell you, we don't know how big of an issue this is in the grand scheme of things between now and not this, but next November. But I can tell you where it is a very big issue. It's on the Republican side. And I was in Iowa chasing these candidates around. 11 of them spoke at a big Lincoln Day dinner over the weekend in Des Moines. And a very common meme that has developed is counting up the number of days it's been since Hillary has answered a question, and then tallying up the number of questions that each of these candidates has been asked. I've been asked hundreds of questions, they say. She has taken 11, or maybe now they'll have to up it, to like 18 or 20 or something like that. But it is a huge, huge issue on that side. Again, giving them all a common foil and allowing them to seem more open, more transparent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, Don, while
true enough, but Don, I'm sorry. What about Scott Walker? He hasn't taken questions in weeks.
That's true. That's true. He was not at the thing this weekend, so I didn't
standing
hear it
down,
from
sir.
Him. But it is an issue that they're talking about, which is not to say that they are all open and accessible and ready to answer every question we want to put with them. Far be it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Don, I mean, while we're talking about Iowa, let's talk about where the voters' minds are there. We have some tape of someone you spoke with, voter Sherry Coyer. She's in
Quaker.
My apologies, Sherry, if you're listening. She's a voter in Sioux County, and she was at a Rick Perry event, and she gave you her assessment of the former Texas governor.
I liked him. I listened to Bobby Jindal yesterday. I liked him, and I liked Ben Carson. I met him in Des Moines. So that's the problem. It's just very difficult. I want to stay open to the best person.
Don, was there anyone Sherry didn't like?
I'm trying to think. I talked to so many people that day, but here's what I heard generally. This was in northwestern Iowa, far northwestern Iowa, which is the most conservative part of the state, and you do have a heavy evangelical component there. I would find people who were more likely to hedge their bets about Jeb Bush or Chris Christie and some of the candidates that they perceive as being moderate. But there are a lot of candidates who Christian conservative voters find very likable in this in this big and growing Republican field. And that's part of the very interesting dynamic. 4 years ago, Rick Santorum won the Iowa caucuses, though it took him a few weeks to figure that out because it was so close. Before that, it was Mike Huckabee winning the Iowa caucuses. They both kind of had a clear lane with those Christian conservative voters, those evangelical voters. This year, it's going to be fragmented because, as you heard her saying, there are just so many candidates that they like, which could really fragment that part of the caucus vote.
And one of the big issues on the Republican side this week has been the question of whether these candidates would have invaded Iraq, given what we know now. I want to listen to some tape here from some of the leading candidates, Julie, and then come to you. Jeb Bush here, who has had difficulty answering this question. He was asked about it at a business roundtable lunch in New Hampshire on Wednesday.
The focus ought to be on knowing what you know now, Mr. President. Should you have kept 10,000 troops in Iraq, or 15,000, or 4,000? That's the better answer, because of yesterday, Ramadi has now been taken over by ISIS. ISIS didn't exist when my brother was president.
So putting the onus on President Obama there. Marco Rubio was on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace. He was asked about it, too.
Was it a mistake?
It was not a mistake for the president to decide to go into Iraq, because at the time he was told.
I'm not asking you that. I'm asking you.
In hindsight. Yes. No, the world is a better place because Saddam Hussein is not there.
So I wouldn't characterize it.
But I don't understand the question you're asking.
I'm asking you, knowing everything, as we sit here in 20.
Okay, so that went on for a while. And then here's Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker talking on Face the Nation.
I think any president, regardless of party, probably would have made a similar decision to what President Bush did at the time with the information he had available. Remember, even Secretary of State, then Senator Clinton, voted for measures supporting the Iraq war. I think it was a failure in many cases in the intelligence that was given to the president, to the Congress at the time.
Julie, what is the right answer for a Republican? Or did any of these guys do well in their answer given what they want to achieve right now?
I don't know that there is a good answer to that question. It's such a trap for Republicans, isn't it? Because either you challenge the Republican orthodoxy by challenging Bush and saying, no, I wouldn't have gone into Iraq. And then there's all sorts of risks attendant with that, too. But then so you're not hawkish enough. It's a hypothetical with no good answer. And there they go. You hear Marco Rubio trying to be nuanced in the presidential campaign, which is an atmosphere that rejects nuance of any kind at all. And so you just get caught up in these traps. And it's terrible. Hypotheticals are awful. And a much better question is, what would you do now about ISIS? But I do think we're going to get really bogged down in this campaign about who was to blame for the creation of ISIS. Hmm. And it seems to me that both presidents share a bit of the blame. But we're going to hear from Republicans that this was all President Obama's fault.
Hmm. And what they're trying to do is get past that question. Maybe they say it was a mistake. Rick Perry certainly says, knowing what we know now, it was a mistake. But they say that the goal was honorable, and then they make the pivot to put it on President Obama. And Senator Lindsey Graham, who is about to get into the race in the next couple of days, said in Iowa this week, everybody's trying to put the blame on George W. Bush about the current state of things in Iraq. The blame goes squarely on the shoulders of Barack Obama, period.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk.
It is fascinating that we're still litigating.
I'm sorry to jump in there, but there is another sort of really big issue that's perplexing both Democrats and Republicans that I do want to talk about, and that is that bulk collection of phone records by the NSA, because on the Senate floor on Wednesday, Rand Paul talked for 10 and a half hours against a House-approved bill that would end the NSA's surveillance of American phone records. He says he wants even more reform, so let's listen.
Whether or not we should collect all Americans' phone records all the time should be discussed in public. It should have been revealed in an honest way. The fact that the director of our national intelligence lied to us and said the program didn't even exist, I think is unforgivable.
So, Julie, is this one issue in which Rand Paul can really differentiate himself, a winning issue for him?
Yeah, well, he certainly does. So far, the only other member of the Republican field who agrees with him, oddly enough, is Mike Huckabee. And what a strange pairing that is. You know, when Rand Paul started on this crusade against the NSA's surveillance program, he was on the side of public opinion, and it really looked like a winner for him. He looked like sort of a righteous warrior in this crusade. But now, with the rise of ISIS and concerns about terrorism, especially among Republicans, It doesn't look like such a winning issue. But where it could actually help him is with younger voters. He's making a strong play for them. And this is an area they're very concerned about.
All right. One more thing real quick, Don. Republican National Committee announcing rules for the first candidates debate on August 6th. I can't believe we're getting to the point where it's almost debate season here. But Cleveland, Ohio. And they're only going to allow the top 10 finishers in the national polls, an average of the national polls, into the debate, which would leave out, at this moment anyway, Governor Bobby Jindal, Carly Fiorina. What do you think of that?
10 is still a lot of people. I mean, it was hard to imagine
Come on.
How unwieldy it was going to be with 18 or 19. So I think there is a sense that they have to do something, but people are going to be mad. And then there's the later debate. It's a CNN debate at the Reagan Library in September, where they're going to have a two-part debate. One part will have 10 based on polls, and then the other part will open it up to anybody who's over 1%. Imagine you'll stand on the stage for an hour and a half, and by the time you divvy up the time, you might get one or two sentences out of your mouth.
It's going to look like
democracy.
It's going to look like an airport where you have all the ticket counters. You could do it in the airport, actually. Don Gagne from NPR, national political correspondent, and Julie Mason, host of the Press Pool on Sirius XM's POTUS Channel 124. Thanks so much, as always, guys.
Thank you. It won't be dull.